Welcome to Movements, a broadcast where we look at stories in the news and connect them to Canada's colonial history, its democracy serving a diverse population, and its foreign affairs with a global north and global south analysis. It's a broadcast that talks about power, biases, and how all of us in the Eastern Townships can care about what's going on near and far. I'm Gabrielle, and let's dive right into what's been happening. Today, we are looking at the ongoing inquiry public hearings launched on October 13th about whether the federal government was justified in invoking the Emergencies Act to clear out the Freedom Convoy in Ottawa. The hearings of the inquiry are set to last until the end of November, so as this broadcast airs, new information may have come to light. We chose to examine this ongoing process as a very real reminder of how, under the pressure of a pandemic stretching over 2 years, Canadian society cracked along the lines of which authorities to listen to, who they believed, and policy that would move us forward. It's times like these that reveal just how fragmented of a democracy we are, that asks if the common ground we stand on is more of an ice shelf shrinking in the ocean. The Emergencies Act was invoked by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on February 14th, in order to empower officials with special powers to clear out the protesters gridlocking downtown Ottawa. Officials could impose fines or imprisonment on participants who refused to leave the protest zone, as well as designate some key services such as tow truck operations. Whenever the Emergencies Act is invoked, as part of this democratic process in Canada, there is an inquiry that must follow to determine whether or not it was appropriate and the circumstances that led to the invocation. Paul Rouleau, former Ontario Superior Court Justice, is leading the inquiry. The commission is calling in over 65 witnesses, ranging from Ottawa residents to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. They're getting down to the bottom line of what exactly happened that last week of January and into February in Ottawa. From those facts, the commission will write a final report that must be tabled in the House of Commons and the Senate by February 20th of next year. Before we continue into some of the details of the inquiry so far, let's bring this back to the townships. Right now, we are in full swing between working in person, sending your kids, or attending school in person, the return of arts and culture and sporting events. And while significant amounts of people do continue to wear masks, conscious that even if we don't act like COVID-19 is around, it doesn't mean it's not there. For the vast majority, the days of being in the red zone are foreign. Mask wearing, bans on private gatherings, the curfew in the province, and opening your VaxiCode app on your smartphone are days that are long in the past. Resisting some of these public health measures deeply resonated with some people. Truckers from the Eastern Townships on January 28th convened at Stansted before departing a little before noon to head to Ottawa. Across the province at different border crossings, convoys joined each other. The spirit of the convoy did not die in the townships after Ottawa was cleared. 3 months later, on April 28th, over 300 vehicles participated in the convoy from Magog to Sherbrooke. Yes. Yes. It started at 11 a.m. in Magog and ended at 5 p.m. in Sherbrooke. Stéphane Sévigny, organizer of this convoy, characterized it as a non-political event, about the continued extension of the mask mandate in Quebec, wrote La Tribune. Though there were a few flags openly decrying Trudeau, Savigny pointed out that the spirit of this convoy was meant to be different. They discouraged these types of flags and wanted the focus to be on being together rather than expressing rage through that way. But unlike this smaller April protest in Sherbrooke, the motives of the Freedom Convoy in Ottawa sometimes feel more unclear. Broadly, they were in Ottawa to demand the government to repeal all public COVID-19 health restrictions and mandates. But lest we ignore the Freedom Convoy's name, it was also a cry for the freedom that they had felt been unrightfully taken away from them. Critics of the convoy will sometimes point out a lack of coherence between the protest and what the federal government could do. For example, all COVID-19 vaccine mandates were the jurisdiction of provinces, not the federal government. But even if we were to pick this out, it remains that 1, people were unhappy, and 2, the overreach of government powers was the source of it. The inquiry is unique in that it's not just the commission's lawyers who are questioning the witnesses, who are neutral and are just trying to figure out what happened on the ground. But we have multiple interests and their lawyers who will get to cross-examine each witness. These lawyers are representing groups that have standing in the inquiry. There's lawyers for the federal government who will likely be trying to pull out facts to suggest the Emergencies Act was justified. There's lawyers representing the Ottawa Police, the National Police Federation for the RCMP, the organizers of the convoy, and the provincial governments of Alberta and Saskatchewan, as well as City of Ottawa and the City of Windsor. This is how Head Commissioner Paul Rouleau puts it. He said in the first day of the public hearings, "While this is not an adversarial proceeding, I recognize that different points of view will be forcefully advanced. This is to be expected and will help ensure that a clear picture of the events is presented and the decisions made or not made by key actors are fully analyzed." Another thing that is unique is the vast amount of information available. The Liberal government agreed with Rouleau's request to waive cabinet confidence over documents that the cabinet used to make the decision to invoke the act. This is only the 4th time in Canadian history where cabinet confidence has been waived for a public inquiry. One other thing to point out, this inquiry is incredibly short. It has a very pressing deadline to deliver a report by February for an issue that remains so divisive from the townships to Ottawa to BC. Rouleau said on the first day as well that unlike other inquiries, this one is measured in days, not years. And so far, what have we heard? First, the Ottawa Police Service was unprepared for the convoy, despite some evidence that they were warned, to an extent, the length and the conditions of the protests. Interim Police Chief Steve Bell said that, based on their intelligence, police were expecting the protesters to leave after several days. The president of the Ottawa Gatineau Hotel Association had sent an email to the city council that they were expecting rooms to be booked for at least 30 days. The Ontario Provincial Police, the OPP's intelligence bureau, warned more than a week before the convoy arrived that the protest would be a long-term event. Long-term event seems certainly longer than what Bell and another city councillor testified that the Ottawa police expected the protests would be over after the weekend. Next, there's a lot of testimony that could be seen as trying to build a defense for the federal government. But there's a lot more to hear in the coming weeks as cabinet ministers will be testifying towards the end. Jim Watson, mayor of Ottawa at the time, said that the Emergencies Act was absolutely necessary, that they did not have the police resources needed to handle the protests. Peter Slowly, the chief of the Ottawa police at the time, said that they needed 1,800 more police on the ground, and many of the 250 police provided by the RCMP had went to protect Trudeau and the Governor General, not the needs at the protest grounds. Then there's the testimony that the Emergencies Act was helpful in securing the agreement with the tow truck companies who cleared out the protest. If you're a tow truck company, you don't want to expose your name to a bunch of truckers or risk physical damage. OPP Commissioner Thomas Carrick said that the Emergencies Act wasn't necessary to compel them into service, but the act helped provide indemnification or compensation to protect these truckers from any retaliation. It was the push that they needed. The helpful but not necessary sentiment has also been echoed by the RCMP, who submitted an email to the Public Safety Minister's office saying, quote, "We have not yet exhausted all available tools," end quote. The Emergencies Act was invoked hours later. RCMP Commissioner Brenda Lukey testified that the act was helpful, however, in granting them powers to dislodge the gridlock in Ottawa. Finally, how does this relate to two of the three themes we look at in this broadcast, democracy and colonialism? First, we are all part of the outcome of this inquiry. Whether we support the federal government's decision, the convoy, or neither. What the commission finds can very much set a precedent for the next time the federal government considers invoking the Emergencies Act. What the inquiry finds speaks to the scope of the federal government's power when municipalities or provinces find themselves in crisis. Due to it being a protest at the center, when people perceive anywhere from patriotic to disruptive to outright threatening and debilitating, there's a danger that we will subconsciously project these findings onto the right of protest, the right of free speech, even though that's not the point of the inquiry at all. And that's why it's important for all of us in the townships to know what the inquiry really is about before that final report is tabled and spread all over the news. Next, the inquiry reveals the most fragile of our connections with one another. A local Eastern Ontario newspaper describes one couple traveling to Parliament Hill from Stansted, Quebec. Like the vast majority of truckers in Canada, the husband is vaccinated. He works across the border in the US. The couple was planning on visiting their family in the US for Christmas, who they hadn't seen in 2 years. But then a COVID-19 testing requirement was put up, stopping these plans. The inquiry is about an exceptional use of powers for a convoy that includes this couple and also Les Farfardas, a group emerged from the anti-Islam, anti-immigrant far-right group La Meute in Quebec. And while all this is happening, the healthcare system nationwide is in shambles with a shortage of staff, exhaustion of their workers, who bear enormous effects of the pandemic on their mental health. And there are the families of the 722 people who have died due to COVID in the S3 region. Finally, we consider whether the response to the convoy would have been different if it hadn't been predominantly white Canadians gridlocking the capital when those Ottawan residents reported feeling intimidated, when the OPP warned that a mass anti-government protest was heading to Ottawa, when a small minority of protesters waved flags of extremist groups, or when a coffee shop waving a rainbow flag had its window smashed in. We consider that this double standard arises from long-standing policing of Indigenous peoples and Black people, that it is not a coincidence that Black and Indigenous people are more likely to be victims of police-involved death, that police responses to their protests looked much different than what we saw in Ottawa. In 2017, it was found that Indigenous peoples in Canada are more than 10 times more likely to be shot and killed by police officers than their white counterparts. In Ontario, a Black person is 20 times more likely to be shot and killed by police. When we think about the legacy of colonialism in this way, the Freedom Convoy reveals the freedoms that some Canadians still don't have. You've been listening to Movement, a broadcast that looks at colonialism, our democracy, and Canada's foreign affairs. Some weeks we connect stories in the news to all three, and sometimes just one or two of these focuses. Music in this broadcast includes Truth and Honesty by Aretha Franklin and Welcome to the Revolution by Hi-Rez and Jimmy Levy.